Welcome to Creators. This week, share your knowledge. The questions this cast answers are, why should I share my knowledge? Isn't it better to keep my knowledge to myself? And how do I share my knowledge?
Folks, we have a virtual effective manager conference. Thanks to popular demand, we've been adding more of them because we've been selling some of them out. It begins October 12th, so fairly quickly, if you're listening to this on the date that it drops. And it is a Tuesday, Wednesday setup, so you can be done with all four sessions in just 8 days. Of course, like all EMCs, virtual EMCs, we cover one-on-ones, feedback, delegation, and rolling out the Trinity. So you'll understand the logistics and timing of putting all the tools in place over a period of months. I encourage you to come to the website and sign up.
Andrea, one of the ways I knew that not sharing knowledge was unwise was it came up in a Dilbert cartoon. And I think if it's in Dilbert, you know that it's not the right thing to be doing. So, Right. So the one I saw, there's a couple about this subject, but the one I saw, Aesop was asking Dilbert's team, who wants to share knowledge with me via a new intranet collaboration software? And no one does. And as Aesop walks away, Dilbert's co-worker says, I'm hoarding my knowledge in case I ever need it. Which just makes me laugh. Like, oh, I'm just keeping this knowledge like beans in the cupboard in case there's a nuclear winter or something. But knowledge hoarding, where employees purposely keep critical knowledge to themselves, has a number of motivations, and your motivation really doesn't matter, although we're going to talk a little bit about why different reasons are unwise or we can demonstrate that they don't get you the outcome that you want.
Yeah, or misguided.
But it's bad for you and it's bad for the organization.
Yeah. So our outline for today is freely share your knowledge. Don't be right, be effective. Use teach as if teach not. Use feel, felt, found. Share with your team before they ask and share non-specifically.
So if our first sort of overarching instruction, recommendation is freely share your knowledge.
Yeah, knowledge unused is wasted, whether it's a power grab, a lack of trust, or you know those pesky organizational politics. When one person or team has knowledge and they hoard it, the organization as a whole suffers. Of course, we're assuming here that the knowledge being hoarded is useful to the rest of the organization. Hoarding irrelevant knowledge is probably fine. But the problem, of course, is that discovering or trying to know what's useful to other people is an incredibly difficult task. So for those of you who hoard knowledge because you think that it gives them more value, if you have knowledge and other people don't know you have it, they can't value you for having it.
Okay. If Andrew knows something and he thinks because he knows it, he's a better employee, he's more valuable, like they can't fire him because they need him, but nobody knows that he knows that, then they're going to fire him anyway because they don't know that they need him, right?
Right.
And in the same way, like, it's like having a fancy car and leaving it in the garage. If nobody knows you've got a fancy car, they can't admire you for having the fancy car.
Right,
it's
exactly.
It's pointless buying a Ferrari if you keep it in the garage and nobody ever knows that you have a Ferrari.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But for those who hoard knowledge because they like to know something that others don't know, right? Well, that's a game that should end in middle school. It's not appropriate in the workplace. We don't hint about what we know. We don't withhold information and only share for our own personal gain. These are the types of games that are relationship destroying. Such selfishness really destroys the benefits of organizations, of people working together.
So another reason for hoarding knowledge, or another justification that people have, is they fear a reaction if they share something. And your fears are not completely unmerited. Sharing knowledge can be risky.
Sure.
So for example, you know, you might be in a meeting and they're talking about something and you read an article that seems relevant and you say, hey, I read this thing, and you're sharing your knowledge of the article. Now, someone might laugh at you for reading the article or whatever. You know, I read this in Cosmo, probably in a room full of VPs. You'll probably get laughed at. Although, if it's a relevant idea and it gives you some, you know, inspiration about a product, it doesn't matter where you got it. But, you know, some people make judgments.
Sometimes you can't help where, you know, what publications decide to publish what, right?
Yeah.
You could have a really good article, but it just so happens to come from a publication that's not necessarily the place you would look for stuff like that.
Exactly. And the risk really isn't about sharing the knowledge, it's about sharing of any idea you have. You know, people say before a brainstorm, oh, no idea is stupid. You know, the peanut butter rule, you can say anything, including peanut butter, during a brainstorm. We're not judging ideas, we're just saying them. That doesn't mean that when you say peanut butter, someone won't laugh.
Right.
And for some people in some companies, there are negative consequences for speaking up. And if you're in that kind of company, then get your resume ready and go to a different company. Because if you're in a company where ideas aren't at least respected in the sense of it's an idea, even if it's, you know, not workable, not useful, not something that we're going to do, you can still have respect for the fact that somebody came up with an idea wherever they got it, then, you know, find a different company because it's not a good place to work.
I mean, that's really the purpose for organizations, right? That's why you organize and you bring people together, is for diversity of thought and ideas.
It's the synergy rule.
Right.
Synergy has gone out of fashion as a concept in business, you know? It used to be a thing that, you know, together we're more than the sum of our parts, but they don't say it anymore. But, you know, if the risk is small or you've never spoken up because you're afraid that someone's going to laugh at you or that there's going to be some negative consequences, then speak up. Teams and organizations are better for the variety of experience and the ideas of the employees, even when you don't use that idea. I mean, a lot of the time you might have an idea and that's not the one we use, but because you said that out loud, someone else comes out with the thing that we do use.
Absolutely. That's a great point. If the barrier is external, right, then try to work through it. But if the barrier is internal, just get over it.
Yes.
You know, if it's yours.
And start small. Say something that you think is, you know, pretty acceptable and see what happens.
Right. Absolutely. And finally, the last one is for those who don't share because they think it gives them some sort of power. You're wrong. You'll know by now from listening to Career Tools that there are three types of power in every organization. There's role power, there's relationship power, and there's expertise power. And people who hoard knowledge often believe that their knowledge increases their expertise power. The problem with that is they're confusing expertise and power. Sure, the expertise comes from the learning, comes from the information, but the power comes from the sharing.
Exactly. That expertise power is only realized when people come to ask you for your knowledge. It's kind of like the stock market gains. You know, you can see you've bought stocks and you can see the stock market rising. Your stocks actually don't realize the value, the increased value from the market rising until you sell them. That's when you get that extra money. Until then, it's just theoretical. It's like people being paper millionaires. Until you sell all those stocks and get the million, it's theoretical.
Yeah, it's not money in the bank.
Exactly.
Right.
But when you share knowledge in the right way at the right time and your input makes a positive difference, then people start to come to you for that knowledge. And when they tell people, hey, go ask Bill because he knows about that stuff, that's when you can really say you have expertise power, not when you have it, you have the knowledge, but nobody's using it or nobody knows about it. It's not until, you know, you are the subject matter expert that everybody comes to that you are realizing that power.
Right. I've never worked in an organization where the subject matter expert was the person that didn't share any information, right?
No.
They're the subject matter expert because you go to them to get information.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is some organizational knowledge that is confidential, though, either for a short period of time or permanently. And we're not telling you to share that. Now, that said, there is a lot of confidential information that is shared when it shouldn't be, and non-confidential information that is not shared when it could be. A true professional shares what can be shares or what can be shared and does not share what can't be shared. And they know the difference.
So you used to work in HR. How many times did you think something should be confidential and everybody knew?
Oh, absolutely.
Like every day of the week, yeah?
Yeah. It was one of those things. I worked in HR, and one of the things, one of my teams handled our HR system, or a big part of it, and some of the transactional stuff that happens. And, you know, I was going through, I think my first or second week in that role, kind of learning what my team does, you know, and all of that. And I was like, you guys can see all of that stuff? I mean, there's a lot of information in there. It's interesting. I mean, and there's a lot to, that I think is shared that we don't, you know, we may think is not being shared, mm-hmm. but it is.
Yeah, that's the role of the executive assistant as well, to know what to forget on purpose.
Right, exactly. But I think a lot of us use the kind of economic model, the zero-sum game mm-hmm. kind of thought when it comes to sharing knowledge. You know, that is the model that applies to really most of our life. We apply it almost, you know, subconsciously. The economic model says that if I have a dollar and I give it to Wendy, well, now she's richer by a dollar and I'm poorer by a dollar. But that's not how information works. That's not how the sharing of information works. If I have information and I share it with Wendy, we both have that information.
I'm now richer by that information, but you haven't lost it. So
no.
You're not poorer by that, having yeah. given it. We're both richer by having it. And
yeah.
in addition, by the fact that we both know we both have it.
That's the brilliant part, Wendy. And you know, when I read this cast before we're recording it now, I read that and thought, oh, that is so good. The number of times where, and we'll talk about it, but the number of times where knowing that the other person knows that information is so helpful.
Mm-hmm. That's what I find from DISC when we have the Effective Communications Conference and we teach the people in the room DISC, and there's more than one person in a team that learn the model and what their profile is and so on, is that they then have a shorthand for communicating
right.
about something. So, you know, when one person knows, oh, you've got to send an email to this person and I happen to know they're a high I, and I tell mm-hmm. you that, we have because we both know that we both understand what a high I is, we can shortcut that information. And so that's a really good example that you see a lot.
Yeah, that's a great example. I even tell groups that I train on DISC that some of the best performing organizations that we work with, I mean, we train all of their people on mm-hmm. DISC, and they have, I mean, it's ingrained in their culture. They have, you know, outside their office, they have their name, their title, and a plate that has their DISC profile score. Like, it's that prevalent in the culture. We have folks that I've trained and that have been to the M conference that have a repository, like a shared folder internally that has everyone's DISC profile or their assessment. Mm-hmm. So you can see if you're sending an email within the organization and it's, you know, a cold email, you've never met that person, you can go and look up their DISC profile before you send that email, which is great.
Yeah, that just shortcuts everything.
Right.
So let's do another sort of non-theoretical example. Let's say yeah. I know how to access a document on our team's shared drive and Andrew doesn't know where it is. So I tell him where to find it and now we both know. So I'm not poorer for the fact that I told Andrew where it is and he's richer for the fact that he knows. But the second part is equally useful because next time someone comes to me and says, do you know how to find this document? And I'm too busy to answer, I can say, I do, but I can't do it right now. Why don't you go to Andrew? Because he knows where it is too. And so I've saved some time. Or right. the next time that Andrew and I need to work on that document or we're working together on something, I don't need to say, hey, go find the document. This is where it is, because I already know that you know where it is. And we both benefit from knowing that the other person also knows that piece of information. And it's a really important factor in deciding whether hoarding or sharing information is worth it. And it's one that rarely people include when they're making that decision.
Right, exactly. Our next point is don't be right, be effective. So now that hopefully we've convinced you that sharing knowledge is the way to go. We're going to give you, of course, because this is career tools, mm-hmm. right? And manager tools. This is how we do it. We give you actionable guidance. We're going to share the how and the when. Whenever you're sharing knowledge, keep in mind, don't be right, be effective. It's easy to become the corrective teacher when you see other people making or about to make a silly mistake, especially for you high C's and D's. It's better not to say the first thing that pops into your head when you see someone about to make a mistake.
Ask me how I know. Yeah, because usually the first thing that's going to come into my mind is like proving I'm right or proving I'm smart or about the fact that I'm frustrated watching someone else make a mistake. And even if what I say isn't about one of those things, it sounds like that because that's my tone of voice, because in the back of my head, that's what I'm saying. Like, honestly, are you really going to do that? So it can sound that way. So instead, just wait one beat and then use one of the techniques we're going to describe now. And you'll be really surprised at how much more people come to you for information when you deliver it in a way that's, I'll go for kinder for want of a better word, but just mm-hmm. that beat and that second of like, okay, I'm going to share this in a way that's where people are going to be, where it's going to be effective, because you could be right, but not effective. So
yeah, I would say kind is a good word, or even thoughtful, right?
Yes.
It's just you're thoughtful about your approach. And the first approach is use teach as if teach not. Teach as if teach not is a well-regarded technique where we impart knowledge that is probably new to the recipient, but we politely assume that the recipient did know that information and only didn't act on it or forgot it, or perhaps they applied a different approach for some reason.
Yeah. The purpose of teach as if teach not is to suggest that there might be a better way of doing something whilst not implying that the person wasn't aware of it. So we're allowing them to save face by stating that they probably knew, even though they didn't do. And there is a whole podcast, if you're a manager, about using this as a method of performance communication in the podcast, which is cleverly titled Teach As If Teach Not Performance Communication. But basically, this has two steps. So step one is beginning with a phrase that implies that the person already knows what you're about to say. So you probably know this, but, or you may have heard that, or of course you know, or I'm sure somebody told you already.
Yeah. And the next step of that, right, is we set that premise and then we just share the knowledge, right? So that would sound like, you probably know this, but you have to save the line item before you move to the payment page. Or you may have heard that the boss is a stickler for punctuality. It's true. He hates when we're late to meetings, even when he doesn't say anything. Or of course, you know that, you know, Acme Incorporated is our one of our top three customers. So we make an extra effort to treat them well. Or I'm sure someone told you already, payroll weeks mean that expenses have to be in on Monday instead of on Tuesday. Just wanted to make sure no one else had mentioned it. We can also use this the other way, mm-hmm. right? As a negative, implying that someone didn't do something because they hadn't been informed, not because they forgot or willfully didn't do something, right? You could say, oh, you probably weren't told, but all the blue tags go on the left. Or, oh, I bet Joe forgot to tell you that we expect everyone to do their submits every night, even if they're not happy with the code yet. It means we don't lose too many days' work if we have a problem.
It's a really nice way of...
like giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly. And just not telling, but sharing, you know?
Yeah. You're not accusing them of anything, mm-hmm. right? You're giving them that benefit of the doubt, giving them the opportunity to say, hey, you know what? I assume you didn't, you know,
mm-hmm. it's
want
not your
to
fault.
Screw that up.
Or, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's another one of those shorthand things. When I hear someone around here do it to me because I know it, I'm like, oh, yeah. And a lot of the time I'll go, yeah, do you know what? I did know that. I was just being stupid.
Yeah.
Another method is feel, felt, found. And again, there is a podcast called Feel, Felt, Found. But this is useful anytime you sense that you're not emotionally or rationally aligned with someone. So it's a really good way to diffuse tension. If you're in disagreement with somebody, but because you have different knowledge, and it acknowledges that the person might feel awkward about the fact that they don't know something you know. And so it removes the tension because you're going to put yourself back in the position when you didn't know this either. So let me give you an example. The model always consists of three parts. The feel sentence, where you say you acknowledge how they feel. Felt, where you say, I felt that way too. And found, where you share the knowledge. So for example, Terry, I can respect how you feel here. When others don't seem to be responding to my requests, I felt like you do. It makes sense. And what I've found is the best approach is either some peer feedback or some questions about whether he's clear he really does owe you the numbers, and then maybe some documentation. And then you can follow up with like, it's up to you, but it's worked for me.
Yeah, I love the I've found part, right? Because then it's just you're sharing information. You're not casting aspersions or saying that's what you should do.
Yes,
you're just
exactly.
Saying, this is what I found to be effective.
Exactly.
Yeah. Another example would be, you know, I could see why you'd feel that way, and I'm sorry I wasn't more clear. I'd probably have felt the same under the circumstances. What I found is when the boss doesn't see it our way, kind of the marketing way, she doesn't like that approach. And so I try to put it in her language with all the ops stuff. Seems to work better that way.
Yeah. And again, it's kind of like peer feedback in the sense of I'm just giving you some information and you can choose whether or not to use it.
Right.
It's much more laid back and much more casual, and it doesn't put you in that kind of teacher-student relationship. And so it's much more equitable.
Right. And there's no expectations, right? Going back to the peer feedback model. I'm not expecting you to do anything with this. I'm just sharing. It's just very, you know, good-hearted, good-natured. Mm-hmm.
When people say you need to be more of a team player, this is what they mean.
This is it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Folks, if you're not a licensee of Manager Tools, we strongly encourage you to become one. We continue to add value to the license. If you don't know what a license is, of course, the podcast, the audio of podcasts are free. But if you want a written version to save you time, if you want to refer to it at any time, go back and refer to the basics, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, delegation, or any of the other Hall of Fame casts we have, all you have to do is go online and you can read a white paper that is essentially 99% of the content on the show. It also gives you access to things I think. It gives you access to the interview creation tool, to our interviewing series. And a licensee also now gets access to Executive Tools, which is our biweekly cast focused on executives with show notes as well. We continue to add value because we're trying to encourage you to become a licensee, because it's licensee revenue that helps us spread the word about effective management all over the world. Come to the website and sign up.
So next up, share before someone makes a mistake. And hopefully this is self-explanatory. Like, there's nothing worse than somebody telling you what you should have done after you did it. Like, you know, when they say, hey, you should buy those things from Amazon that tell you where the edge of your garage is after you have missed the edge of the garage and hit the end with your car. And you know, when somebody tells us afterwards, we can wonder if they let us make the mistake on purpose. You know, if somebody lets us run on in a meeting and the boss gets really frustrated with us, we wonder if they did that on purpose to get us into trouble. And, you know, most of us are not doing that on purpose. But that train of thought leads to all sorts of negative relationship consequences. So don't let that happen. Like, share beforehand. And teach as teach not really works well for the beforehand stuff. I'm sure you know that the boss gets really frustrated if you go over time on the agenda. So, you know, just wanted to remind you before you go into the meeting, or just wanted to share that because, you know, I've been on the wrong side of that. It's not a nice place to be.
Right, exactly. Probably another example of that would be, you know, every boss has kind of weird proclivity, like little weird peccadilloes, right? Like little quirks, right? So another example would be, hey, someone probably already told you this, but the boss has a weird thing about colors, the colors on the spreadsheets, right? He hates the standard kind of graph colors that are default in Excel or whatever, right? So I use this handy dandy table of color changes to help me make them faster. If you don't have anything else and it would be helpful, I have no problem sharing it with you, right? That would be an example.
Oh, here's another one. I know you know this, but before you hit send, you are going to blank out customer name, aren't you? Because I sent one without doing that once, and I've been paranoid ever since. You know, when you can see someone about to hit send on an email they really shouldn't be sending, that's a nice thing to do, is to tell them not to, but not in a, don't send that, but in a, you know, hey, you are going to fix that kind of way.
Right. So the next point is, share with your team before they ask. Many of us develop shortcuts to solve repeated frustrations or issues. Now, if you don't do this, you should. A rule of thumb is that anytime you do something three times, you should develop a process for it. Sharing those shortcuts with your team is a way to share knowledge without singling one person out for not knowing, or to generally be helpful, or to get kudos for your skills, depending on, you know, what motivates you. For example, you might want to develop, or you might develop a document that helps you remember knowledge that you need frequently, like product SKUs or formulas. You might have developed a set of preferences for a certain piece of software that others could benefit from. You might, and if you don't, you should create one of these because they're incredibly useful. Yeah. Have a list of all the software that you need on your computer in case you need to wipe it and start again, or you get a new machine.
I have a list of
software
I need. And whenever we have someone you start, I send it to them and say, hey, these are the ones I use every day. And I'll, if any of them are unfamiliar, I'll show you how to use them.
I remember getting that.
Yeah. Just, you know, and it says on it stupid things like MS Word, Excel, PowerPoint. Like anybody would know in any office they need to download them, but it's not the first thing you think of on your first day. And the first time you think about it is when somebody sends you a Word document and you can't open it. And then, you know, they're waiting for you to open it and you're like, oh God, I've got to download the software and then I've got to get a license and all that stuff. So having that list is super useful. For people who are on the team, it's useful because you don't have to go through it with someone. You just send them the list and go, hey, go download these. And you know that they have what you need them to have.
Right. And the benefit of having it ahead of time is, now, for us, right? I mean, we happen to have two people, me and Elizabeth, starting this year. Mm-hmm. But in our company, we don't have new people starting very often.
Right.
Knowing that, I mean, I'll just share, I had that in my inbox before I even started day one, because you had it and you shared it. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that could have taken you a day or, you know, a few hours to put together, but I didn't have to wait. It was there, right? And I could get started on it right then, which is really helpful on day one, because there's so, I mean, you're searching for things to do on day one. You want to be able to keep people busy and work on something. So that's really helpful.
And when Sarah had a machine that crashed and wiped itself, I was on the phone with her in one hand going down the list, going, you need to download this, you need to download this. And she could do it in 20 minutes, which is great because that meant she could present virtually that afternoon rather than having to do it all herself without any kind of structure or, you know, just do it off your brain. Yeah, it's probably the most the useful document I have. Like the one that I'm grateful for the most often.
Yeah.
So you can send this type of information out to your team with a note that says, hey, all, I was having a problem remembering our top 10 SKUs and I created this document to help me and I thought I'd share it just in case it'll help you too. And those of you who do these kind of things, like create these documents, create these shortcuts for yourself, will be shocked at the people that don't. I am always shocked. You know, random things like I have a list of the hex codes for the colors on our website. And whenever somebody asks me for it, I'm like, wait a minute, you don't have this? Of course, doesn't everybody have this? And you'll be really shocked at the long ways that people go about things.
Right.
But, you know, and just how valuable they find your checklist or your cheat sheet. You know, those of us who do that naturally, I'll put that lazy people like me, who don't want to do it time and time again and create a checklist or create a cheat sheet, you'll be shocked at how much time you can save other people.
Yeah. And you just don't know. I mean, you don't, if you're, Wendy, you do this really well. There are times where you'll say, hey, I was struggling with this or my notifications for this particular set of piece of software. And so I did some research on it. Well, that time that you spent on that, call it 20 minutes, maybe, you share that. You say, hey, I was having this issue and maybe you will be too. And maybe nobody is, but chances are people are having that issue. They don't even know they're having it. Right?
Yeah.
And then I just keep a little, I have a little label in my email of just things I need to read that Wendy sent out at some point that could be helpful. And so I just, you know, love going through that every once in a while and saying, oh yeah, I would have never thought of that. Right. And those types of things are really, really helpful for some people that don't even know they're having an issue.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that there used to be a meme. I guess it's gone away again. Let me Google that for you. And it used to kind of go Google. And I sometimes think that, but those of us who can find things on Google and find the answer, you know, there's other people that can't do that. So it's not only knowledge, it's a skill.
Totally.
So the moment that more than one person is involved in an activity, communication has to happen in order for that activity to be effective. In fact, the reason we write notes to ourselves is that you don't even need two people to need communication. Mm-hmm. Even when there's one person, yourself, you write a note to yourself because communication is essential to effectiveness. And there are no good reasons for hoarding knowledge and no good outcomes from doing so. And sharing is easy, and you can do it in a kind way, in a thoughtful way, in a sharing way rather than in a telling way. You know, this is what everybody is meaning when they say collaboration is essential nowadays. It's sharing knowledge. And collaboration was always essential, but you know, that's what they're talking about when they do. And collaborators share what they know, and selfish people don't. And who wants to be a selfish person?
That's right.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.